like to introduce Jean Bush, who's a teacher at Santa Cruz Zen Center, Dharma heir of Catherine Dennis, as you all know, who just passed away, what was it, two?
Just 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago. So, welcome.
Thank you
for coming, Dr. Koji.
It's my pleasure to return here. It's been quite a long time, maybe 7 or 8 years since I've been up, and looks a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I was commenting earlier, maybe it looks a little bit more civilized than it did then. The pathway down from the kitchen area should make it easier to carry pots back and forth for Sashin. I'm sure the Soku and serving crew are happy with that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Michael just informed me that we're a little less formal here, so forgive me if I look too formal. It's always good, I think, to err on the side of being formal so as to not insult. But how to do that without seeming stuffy is a little conundrum. My name is Jean, and as Michael said, I'm Catherine's heir. Somehow that carries a little bit more weight with me now that she's passed on. I'm not quite sure how or why, but saying those words brings up a lot of emotion for me today. In my Dharma life, I work at Santa Cruz Zen Center, and I'm the administrator there, which really means that I fix the toilets and look after the garden and the buildings and interact with the people who rent and participate on the board practice committee, kind of the hub that a lot of things pass through. It's not so important, really. It's just that somebody has to occupy that role as the hub, just like the center of a wheel in a way. Those spokes have to go somewhere. And I also teach sewing for Santa Cruz Zen Center. This is a very beautiful role of offering fabric and offering this tiny chant, but it's one of the doorways in to more formal practice when people are ready to make that big commitment to take the precepts. And watching people who may not be so familiar with needle and thread and fabric learn their hands and meet the mind of sewing. Not unlike the mind of tea, I'm imagining. And for my paid work, I teach in the public schools in Santa Cruz, and I'm in my 36th year of public school teaching. And right now I work at an alternative high school called the ARC Independent Studies. You've probably seen it. It's on the corner of Brancifordi and Water in town, kind of an imposing, it says Brancifordi Grammar School on the outside, big imposing white building. And we serve kids who are choosing to not be in the standard high school for a variety of reasons. I also taught in Watsonville, second grade, for many years. Second grade is a lovely age. The development of the mind is occurring for 7 and 8 years old. No great deal of curiosity enters. And they're losing their teeth, so there's all the drama that a 2-year-old would have. And their little wrists are forming, they're finishing forming their bones, so they're gaining some competence in their hands. It's a beautiful age to teach. I've recently been reminded of teaching second grade in the summer in town. There are a lot of youth programs, soccer camp and crafts camp, and little gaggles of kids kind of being herded around town in their all of them in red t-shirts, or all of them in green t-shirts and shin guards, or whatever their camp happens to be. I've been reminded recently what it's like to walk down the street at the head of a field trip, or the tail, and waiting at the corner for the stoplights to change. You kind of have to wait until the whole crowd clumps up, and then you walk across the street together, and then the whole crowd kind of spreads out accordion style again until the next corner, and then we clump up and spread out, and so on, until we reach the destination. This is what it's like traveling with 35 8-year-olds. I could talk about public school teaching, but that's not what you came for. I'd like today to talk about the concept. It's just a concept, a word, gyoji, and its relationship to zazen and its relationship to our day-to-day life. So, our zazen practice, I don't really know much about you. I think it's important, if you don't mind, indulge me for a moment. It's important to me to have everybody's voice be present in the room. So if you could, we'll go around and say your name and say a little bit about where you practice, how you practice in relationship to this Dharma practice.
My name is Mike. I'm the teacher here at Chikoji.
My name is Todd, and much of the practice seems to be outside of this place.
My name is Greg, and I'm one of the residents at the present time here at Chikoji. And prior to coming here, I spent quite a while practicing Rinzai Zen in Southern California.
Sam, I do not practice here at Chikoji.
I'm John, and I'm a resident here.
Joel, another resident.
Kevin, I'm not a resident practitioner, and my favorite practice is being in Tenzo.
My name's Ali. It's my first time here. I've been getting back into meditation, so it's an interesting journey.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
I'm Cliff, and I met Coben early on, so I'm very fortunate to have practiced here pretty much for all that time.
Thank you for bringing your voices into the room a little bit, the tiniest sliver about you. So it seems like present, at least, in what you've said, that regular zazen practice is part of your life, here or not here, but some kind of way to dip in to the core. And it really doesn't matter whether it's here or not here. What matters is that it's regular. And this way the body kind of knows what to count on. The body knows that at that regular interval there will be some settling. And that regularity kind of feeds stability. I'll call it stability for now. And inside that stability, there, in my experience, develops some kind of confidence, although I would say it's a humble confidence that comes from the direct experience of settling down and the willingness to respond wholeheartedly to the conditions. It's easiest, I think, in my view, to see in zazen because there are no other distractions. I think the most activity might be blinking and breathing, and otherwise everything else is made up. So we can settle easily when there are no other distractions. There are so many ways that practice takes shape. You mentioning Coben, I met him a couple times early in the early 80s, but never speaking. I wouldn't recognize his voice if I heard it on tape. The first time I met him was in Santa Cruz, there on School Street. I walked up the path. I was new to town. And he met me, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but at the head of the path where you'd be turning into the Zendo, he met me there and kind of, I would say, jabbed my belly low. And the response of the body was to bow. So in that one jab.
He jabbed you?
Yeah. I learned how to bow. And I met him a second time, probably 2-3 weeks later, maybe 1982, 81, 82, something like that. And that experience was without jab, just bow, and this very complete meeting in the bow. Touching to me. And each and every moment of meeting really anyone. It could be anyone, has that potential in it for that deep meeting. Sometimes we pay attention more closely to some moments. So, Gyoji. The Gyo of Gyoji, I understand to mean training or practice. And the Ji, this Ji of Ji, Gyoji means continuity or relentlessness or ongoingness. So if we put Gyoji together, it's the continuity of training or continuous practice, or sometimes in literature translated as ceaseless practice. Dogen, in the year, sometime in the year, the spring of the year 1242. So what does that make it? 760 years ago, something like that, gave this talk and said Dharma Gates, in relationship to Dharma Gates, expressed three possible views of these Dharma Gates in Gyoji. One of the three is a little hard to imagine and hard to articulate, but he calls it the universal influence, the ongoing and endless, everlasting influence of anyone's practice. It's already ceaseless in its nature. By sitting zazen for one moment, it already ripples out endlessly. So about a third of his essay is dedicated to that ceaselessness and its universal. And then in Gyoji, he goes on and gives very specific examples of the ceaseless practice exercised by Shakyamuni Buddha, and gives very specific examples, story form, like legend form in a way, from Shakyamuni's life. And then the third meaning, or the third, I would call, facet of Gyoji, is more emphasizing the day-to-day life. So you, I'm sure, know from Dogen that he enunciates again and again that there's no gap between liberation or enlightenment and our day-to-day training. No gap. And Dogen goes on to use the phrase Gyoji, ceaseless practice, to express that no gap. Particularly pointing out that we don't do ceaseless practice in order to escape errors, to escape mistakes, or that if only I were a better, you could fill in the blank, if only I were a better something, then it would be the real deal. But Dogen's point now and always, this Dharma reveals itself. Particularly these words. The effort of such sustained practice is sometimes not hidden. It's an interesting phrase in and of itself. in a way, it's saying, look, it's right in front of you. It's sometimes not hidden. Therefore, you aspire to practice. So there's some kind of self-reinforcement that occurs with the joy of meeting in zazen. And then goes on to say, the effect of such sustained practice is sometimes not apparent. Therefore, you may not see it, may not hear it, may not know it. Understand that although it is not revealed, it's not hidden. So there's a several paragraph sequence in which Dogen describes the revealed, simultaneously revealed and hidden nature of this sustained practice, and then closes with, investigate this in detail, that it is so because the causal condition, meaning the aspiration to practice, the causal condition itself is no other than continuous practice. Though continuous practice is not limited by the causal condition. This is another, sounds conundrum-ish of Dogen speak, but it's really quite clear. Would you like to hear it again? Mm-hmm. Investigate this in detail, that it is so because the causal condition, the aspiration, is no other than continuous practice, though continuous practice is not limited by the causal condition. So I'll pull that apart a little bit by talking about faith, as if Dogen needs explanation. Kind of cracks me up that we try to do this. So, faith. We're taught in our practice to rely upon the triple treasure. We could think of it as a milking stool. You know, milking stools have three. If any one leg is missing, the whole thing tips. The triple treasure. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We've heard that many times. So I'll dissect this a little bit with you and then reconstruct. We could say that our zazen practice is the experience of Buddha. And that is that we touch there. Or even better said, we are open to being touched by what is already true. The endless and unfolding virtue of the universe. It's in our zazen that we can sometimes be touched by this. So for a moment, let's call zazen the Buddha leg of the milking stool. And Dharma, of course, is the teaching. And we hear that there's great merit in hearing the teaching, sitting together in council like this, listening to each other. And by extension, of course, the written word is just written down speech. So hearing or reading, when we're studying on our own, away from here, this is also the merit of study, or the merit of hearing. So this is the practice of Dharma. We now have two legs explicated for a moment. And the third leg I would call the Sangha leg. And this is where we can cultivate and embody the teachings. So Buddha, Dharma, Sangha necessarily work together. It's fruitless in a way to have the insight on the cushion if we don't have some, even I would call academic or intellectual grasp of where that insight can move. And even more fruitless if we don't have a place to embody and enact, really, viscerally, not unlike Koban's coaching to me, bow here from the guts, and that's the only place really that it can arise from. So sometimes in our practice, this is called seeing and contemplating. The seeing is zazen, and the contemplating is the studying the Dharma, and then all enacted in Sangha. So when we hear the Dharma, sometimes it's so wild and inexplicable and out there that I go, okay, I trust you. In this case, when Catherine was teaching more actively, I trust you. So for now, I'll trust that what you say is true. I actually don't know it myself, but I trust you and I trust that you know it. So, okay. This is a kind of faith, a faith in some so-called outside influence. And this is the faith of Dharma, so hearing and reading another trusted guide. It's one kind of faith. And then we have our own experience, and I would call this the faith of Buddha. It's actually, I know this because this is true, aligns with or is in accord with my experience. We could say that our experience of Zazen is not personal. Our experience of Zazen, we could say, is the Buddha's experience of the unconditioned, not separate from our own. So this is the faith of, because this reality actually is this way and it accords with this seeing and this contemplating, I know because I know. So we have two kinds so far. The faith of I know because you know and I trust you, or the faith of I know because I know. Dharma and Buddha. And now, the faith of cultivating and embodying in Sangha. And I'll call this the faith of I don't know. So this is the faith of the willingness to meet each other, the circumstances. What's it like when in the kitchen a recipe is not turning out or not turning out on time and you have a whole group of people waiting for you? I don't know what to do, but I'll continue. And sooner or later, the serving crew will show up, and away the meal will go. So this is the faith of trusting some kind of ambiguity, maybe, or trusting, knowing that whatever it is an expression of the conditions, and collectively, we have the resources to deal with it. So this is the faith of, I don't know, but let's look and see together. Sometimes, in this third faith, we might think, that the conditions exist apart from me. Or, I don't know how that soup got burnt, but it burnt. I don't mean to be picking on the tensa. It's a particularly rich field for naming things that can go wrong. This kind of the faith of I don't know is responding wholeheartedly to the conditions as a part of the conditions. We ourselves occupy some little sliver of space in this set of conditions. So we're willing in this faith of I don't know, we're willing to change and be changed by the conditions as they arise. So this third expression of faith is what I want to continue to focus on right now. And I think this is where we bring the great effort of Gyoji, the great effort of continuous practice, forward, right here. I'll give a couple of examples and then open us up to conversation. I see the clock. I want to apologize in advance that I won't be able to stay for a meal with you. I need to go down to town and tend to Catherine's belongings. We're emptying her apartment this afternoon. And I have a crew. This time, I decided to not do it all myself. I have a crew meeting me in the early afternoon, so I have to be on time. One of the things I do in life, other than public school teaching and fixing toilets, is taiko drumming. Sometimes people call it the way of taiko, in the way you might say it's the way of tea. It's not just going together to make music. This is an embodiment of an entire practice, for lack of a better word. So I'll give you an example of the way in which continuous practice can show up anywhere, not just in the Zendo. Ikuyo is the teacher at Watsonville Taiko, and she combines musicality with martial arts and with traditional taiko drumming. I wouldn't say she has westernized her taiko, but she has made it completely her own. And she asks us again and again to notice the gap between what she is doing in her body and her sound and what we as students are doing in our bodies and sound. So at some point in maybe 5 years ago, she was expressing what to do with the middle of the body and how the middle of the body is the energy generator. And the middle of the body from the hips and legs down bring energy from the earth, and this is how it arrives in the drum. So I could not comprehend mentally what she was talking about. So purposefully, I went to the gym and made my abs ridiculously sore on purpose, just the day before taiko practice, and arrived at practice with a lot of attention here. And then I tried to imitate her micro movements, tiny movements. She exaggerates them. This is an exaggeration, so it's even smaller than that. But by imitating her micro movements with my soreness, bringing those conditions to that moment, I could actually feel the muscle group that she was talking about. I couldn't feel them before. This helped me to isolate what it was she was talking about, and so on, with bringing energy through the thighs and hips into the drum. So over the years, I've made each muscle group too sore, but so that I could feel what she was talking about. Lately, she's been talking about how to put the kidneys in, and I can't quite figure out how to get there. But two nights ago, she said, this is unusual, she's not usually this blunt, close your anus. Okay, I understand that. And this produces this sound. And then at some point, she said, at this level, we only need one sound. And she put an entire masterful stroke into a drum, and that sound rippled into the room. Not a bell that doesn't have that resonance, but a drum that rippled into the room. And she let it ripple for about a minute. At this stage, you only need one sound. And then the circumstances call for us to make music. So then she was back in the lesson. So that masterful movement of just this one, and yet, of course, the circumstances call for, again, continuous practice. In my view, this is an example of continuous practice. So the faith of I trust her as a Taiko teacher. So I trust that she knows what she's talking about, and it's my job to pay attention. And then it's my job to continue to pay attention with memorizing the music. I could generalize this to studying the Dharma in my off hours. And then it's my job to show up and play music together with the rest of the group. Not just with the people, but with the drums and sticks together. The whole works, makes the music together. So no one can teach you how to move. No one really can teach you how to bow. The job is to pay attention. Find someone whose movements you admire and watch what they do and imitate what they do. This is the, I trust you, I don't know, but I know because you know, and I'll follow along. It's not to do it mindlessly, but to start noticing the gap between what they're producing and what you're producing. This is bringing Dharma into the life. I go through spasms of preparing notes, and then I ignore them. So each day, please bring a little bit of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha into your life. Faith is practice, and this kind of faith is not passive. It's the faith of engagement. I trust that what Dogen says about the universal influence of our daily practice is true, simply because I trust his teaching. And I know this to be true because much of it is true with my own experience when my own kind of twisted causes are not obscuring the way. And it seems to be a necessity for me, maybe for you too, to engage in Sangha practice so that we can continue to cultivate and embody this very non-passive form of faith. I'd like to hear from you. Do you include Buddha, Dharma, Sangha in your daily life? How do you do that?
Exactly answering that question, but regarding continuous practice, sort of the aspiration for continuous practice, in your experience, do you have a sense of what do you call it, assessment of when practice? Say in daily life, when practice is engaged, or not assessment, but maybe confirmation or acknowledgement that practice is engaged, or also when it's not. I mean, would there be a cue, I guess you'd say, of when it's working, or when continuous practice is functioning, when you can say, I wasn't practicing, I was not engaged, or say, yes, I was engaged. So how, just kind of as a kind of assignment or something like that, how would you, what do you recommend?
I'm glad to hear the distinction you make between assessing and a kind of confirmation. That's an important distinction. I think as human beings, we're prone to judge and evaluate, assess. This is good, this is not good, this is healthy, this is unhealthy. this is enlivening, this is weak. So at any time, if I were to assess and engage the mind and decide that that's how something is, I'm missing the mark. In faith, in the teaching that we have called Faith Mind, there's a phrase that says, just let go now of clinging mind. You are already walking freely and undisturbed. So, assessment is a little bit like clinging mind, evaluating. And we might kind of go on, well, that felt good, so that must have been right. Or that felt shitty, and that didn't feel so much like practice. But actually, deep practice can occur in what feels shitty. So, separating out assessment from confirmation, let's take a look at that. I think it's kind of like this. If I am engaged completely in with what's in front of me, I'm engaged in this, I don't know. It's the faith of I don't know. And that is an inquiry into what is this. So if I'm engaged in what is this present tense, it's kind of a confirmation that this is continuous practice. And if I am catching myself going, what was that? Past tense. I think I have missed something. So, present tense, I think I would say, is the confirmation of Gyoji. Including, in present tense, noticing that I'm saying, what was that? Now, I'm catching the what is this of what it was that. Does that help?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's an interesting story. So I got a cat, and about like a month ago, I'm helping my friend out. And the thing is, sometimes I'm cleaning or trying to do other things, and my cat just comes up to me and purrs and wants attention. And when I pet the cat, it actually brings me like down to what's going on, and hearing the cat purr, and just like I'm thinking, okay, like what is life? What is, you know, just that simple act. It really just always brings me to that Dharma, and to just realizing, you know, love and everything. But then when I'm during my day life, I completely forget Dharma, and just am so distracted. But that one moment, every time I come home, or like in the middle of the night, always pet the cat. Even at like 5 in the morning when she wakes me up and wants pets, it actually reminds me of Dharma.
Absolutely. You know, pets, I have a dog. You might have heard her barking during Zazen. She's with me all the time, everywhere. And our pets keep us embodied. Pets live in their bodies. Animals, the world, we also live in our bodies, and we get distracted. So your cat, bow to her. She's teaching you. What's your cat's name?
Binky.
Binky. That's so sweet.
Bow to Binky. Sounds good.
Well, I had a cat before named Azrael.
Azrael.
Yeah, it was named after the cat in Smurfs.
All right, so we've got A, B. Your next cat's name has to begin with C. Binky, thank you for being my teacher. Yes. Thank you for bringing me into this present moment. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you. I work as an assistant gardener in a very extensive gardening environment in Cupertino. And part of my daily, almost it's like a practice actually. when I leave here, and we've done our 6 o'clock zazen, 6 a.m., and then I'm down in a completely different environment, but it's not that different from sitting. One of my daily practices is watering, up to 2 hours a day. That's how much I have to get engaged with. And what I've noticed in the process of nurturing the plant life and the soil is that some soil conditions require a very delicate touch with the water, because the soil itself is quite dry and stiff. So my head gardener said, you know, you need to touch that quickly and then come back to it. Mm. Other conditions require a really deep, concentrated watering.
Yeah.
The other thing that has caused a kind of panic in me is certain, where we have a tomato plant hanging in a, it's on a stand, actually. Mm-hmm. It's in full sun. And some marigolds sitting on a stand. And, you know, my responsibility, my attention has to be there to make sure they don't wilt. And a couple of times I've had to sort of intervene very quickly, hoping that they just don't die.
Yeah.
Particularly on these hot, dry days. And what I found is a deeply encouraging moment when I've found that there's this wilting, this dying, for lack of perhaps attention, that they have been revived through a deep watering. So I found that with the water, there's a direct sort of extension or metaphor of my attention.
Absolutely.
And each one of these plants are a specific species, much like topics in my life that have to be nurtured or ignored or let go for lack of time, because this is an immense gardening environment. There's just two of us. So just with the water itself, it's a kind of you know, I don't think I have to expand on it, but for 2 straight hours or more, I have to bring this to fruit trees, roses, begonias, grass. You know, it just goes on, dahlias, zinnias.
And each one requires a different kind of attention.
Exactly.
I understand. So what you're describing is exactly continuous practice. This is what Dogen calls zazen is not only practice while sitting. We've heard that many times. So you, by touching briefly with water here, coming back to it, you're responding to the conditions that it requires. Of course, you understand the allegory that can be for life, with people, our pets, sangha mates. What you're talking about is paying attention. And it comes to mind to describe this character to you. Another very important character in our practice. I'll try to draw it in the air, and then we'll have to close, because you're probably hungry. This character, Men. It has like a little roof on top, lined with movement, and then below, mind, heart, qi. So the above part is understood as now. 2 lines, and the below part is mind. So now, mind, together make men. What you're talking about is the continuous practice of bringing now mind to your plants, we're stewards to our plants. We're stewards to our binky. We're stewards to each other. And our continuous practice is all about this bringing now mind, bringing men forward. Not what we think should be happening, but what's actually happening. Responding wholeheartedly to the conditions. This is exactly Gyoji. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.